Hi, guys. Welcome to this podcast. This is a very special and kind of sad, emotional podcast. Last Thursday, March 14th, 2013, the comedy world lost not only a great comedian, but to a lot of us, a really, really great friend named Scott Kennedy. If you don't know who Scott is, you can go to his website, comicscott.com, or his Facebook page, facebook.com/comicscott. He was, like I said, a great comedian, a great friend. He visited, he toured Iraq over 50 times, entertaining the troops, and brought hundreds of comics with him, myself included, back in 2009. And Scott, like I said, he passed away on the 14th. And actually, the day before, he was scheduled to work with me at a club. So it was doubly emotional for me to learn about his passing. So this week, in his honor, I decided to rerun the podcast that he did with me last, I believe it was May of 2012. So you might have heard this one already, but I just felt it was the least I could do to honor the memory of a again, for the third time, a great comic and a great friend. So I hope you enjoy listening to my interview with Scott. And if you haven't seen him perform, you could definitely check out his clips on YouTube. And if you like what he did, you can go to his Facebook page and leave a nice comment, because the page has been flooded with comments from comics and military and fans from all over the world. So enjoy this. And Scott, wherever you are, we miss you and we love you. And you will always live on in our hearts. Bye, guys. Oh, and just a really awkward side note. Next week, there will not be a show, because I will be actually on a cruise with Allison and my family, and there will not be a way to upload a show for next week. So take next week off, revisit some old episodes, including this one right now with Scott Kennedy. Bye-bye.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of What's for Dinner. This is episode 11. I'm pretty sure about that, even though I don't have it in front of me, because the last podcast, I was off by one. So I think my last podcast was episode 10. This is episode lucky number 11. 11 is actually a very important number for me and my lovely wife, Allison. 11 is the date of many, many important milestones in our life together. We met on February 11th. I asked her to be my girlfriend, coincidentally, on April 11th. And coincidentally, again, I told her I loved her for the first time on June 11th. And then I made sure to ask her to marry me on January 11th. So, little trick for you guys. Make sure you big momentous moments happen on the same day, because it is very easy to remember that date, fellas. Well, anyway, I am podcasting from Lake Tahoe. I believe I'm in Nevada, although it could be California. Literally, the state line is across the street, so I don't know. But I'm in the Nevada, California area in Tahoe, working at the Improv this week, and I'm working with a very good friend of mine who's going to be my guest on the podcast, a very funny comedian, Scott Kennedy. I'm actually just doing this little pre-kind of bumper, if you will, before the interview with Scott, because he is, I just got a text. He's on his way to my room right now. Yes, I'm broadcasting from my room. But no, it's not room number 11. So anyway, so Scott will be here any minute now, and we will start the official interview of the podcast. And yeah, I don't know why I started recording before he got here. I think I was eager to start recording. Very excited. But yeah, we are here in Lake Tahoe. It is beautiful. The weather is gorgeous. It's just so fucking boring up here. But I'll wait for Scott to get here before I get into more of that, because I'm sure he's just as bored as I am. And we could wax philosophic about how boring it is. It's amazing. It's like I'm looking out my window right now, and it is one of some of the beautiful nature I've ever really seen. Just mountains and trees, just like in the middle of this little valley, and of course the lake Tahoe, the lake for the town is named the lake for the town that is. Did that even fucking make sense? I don't think so. The town that is named for the lake. Ah ha ha! There we go. So, fuck. I've still got this cough. The last bit of remnants from the flu that I had. I'm not sure if I had podcasted since my flu. I believe I have. Yes, I believe I did. Yes, my flu, which was brutal, is all but gone. I just had the stupid cough, which fucks up my show too when I'm on stage trying to perform. And that's another thing I'll talk to Scott about. The audiences up here in Tahoe are, to put it delicately, interesting. Very interesting. So I'm going to put a little pause on the recording, and when we come back, it will be me with my good buddy Scott Kennedy. So here we go. All right, so I am sitting here in my lovely hotel room with the very talented, very adorable Scott Kennedy. How you doing, Scott?
Hey, Flip. Thanks for having me here in beautiful Lake Tahoe.
Lake Tahoe.
You're totally downplaying. He's in a four-bedroom suite high atop Lake Tahoe. Nothing but ceiling to a floor glass windows.
Yeah, it really is. They take great care of you here, don't they?
Absolutely.
We could be honest.
No, they do.
All things considered.
What other gigs give you food and...
That is true. Like, we...
stage managers and lighting and...
It's a great room. It just... I was talking a little before you got here about just how... Like, we're looking out the window right now of the room, and it's just gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. But is this seriously not one of the most boring towns you've ever performed in?
Yes, but it's a small town.
I've performed in small towns before, and I've still found things to do. This is, like, so fucking boring here.
But there's things to do. I think we choose not to. You could go out on the lake. You could go rent a bike. You could hike.
Well, that's all physical stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but I mean, there's two movie theaters within 5-minute walks.
See, I saw The Avengers yesterday, which was great.
I've seen it, so, yeah.
You've seen it, so. But you haven't been up for a movie either.
No.
So it's boring.
Yeah, but what would you do, say, in... What was fun about El Paso?
Nothing really. It was pretty boring.
Okay.
Maybe it's a Texas thing. I don't know. Well, I'm not even in Texas. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Flip has a bowl of blow on his big, huge, diamond-embezzled glass coffee table here.
Yeah,
Luxurious.
Truth be told, I'm drinking a strawberry cream frappuccino.
Then they said ma'am when he ordered.
I what?
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Because it's a little effeminate to be drinking a strawberry cream frappuccino.
Is it?
I don't know.
Well, Scott would know because he's the most effeminate looking man I've ever seen in my life. You know, by the way, it's true. Little side note. One of the perks about being a comic here up in Tahoe is that we get meal tickets. Basically, we have these like little tickets, and they gave us a lot of them.
Three a day.
Essentially three a day to buy three meals a day from the couple different restaurants around the casino. So you don't have to worry about buying your food, which is great. For a comic, it saves so much money. It's great. But I went down to Starbucks where I got my incredibly gay frappuccino. And the woman, even though it wasn't on there, she still said I only had a $10 credit.
Yes, that is a false thing because we can order $50 at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Starbucks has it in their mind, and they are wrong, and I want them to know that.
They are wrong. If any Starbucks employee up in Tahoe is listening to this, you're wrong.
Get your jack boot off of our neck, Starbucks.
My God. Just keeping us
down. Because they're run by Nazis.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Starbucks started in a small town in Germany.
It was originally called, like, Starbucks.
Starbuckens.
Starbuckens.
Why do you ask? It was originally called, Show Me the Papers.
But they called everyone welcome except the juice box.
Juice box.
Juice box.
That's
we do not serve juice, but nothing with the word juice in it. No juice box, no orange juice, no, I have no juice of any kind.
Now your podcast is going to be sued by the huge Starbucks corporation.
Yeah, Starbucks is going to come after me. Please, Take the $800 I'm making this week.
Exactly. I'll just give him the guitar. You don't have to sue me, dude. Here,
seriously,
I'll just hand you to you.
I've got nothing. So I'm here. It's very cool, by the way, that we're working together because I've known Scott. We've known each other about 11 years. I met you when I first moved out to L.A.
Yeah.
That was around 2001. And Scott, one of the funniest guys in the business, really. One of the, and actually, I've said this a lot about, because Scott is an openly gay comic. But what I admire and what I love about your act so much is that your act is not, for lack of a better term, gay heavy.
Yeah.
It's a very small part of your act, if you even mention it.
Yeah.
Whereas I notice, like, a lot of other gay comics, that'll be like a cornerstone of their act, is just doing gay jokes and gay. And right. I understand it's part of who you are, so it's fine. That, right. But when it's like totally your act, it just, it gets old.
Yeah, I don't like, I mean, it's just, it's a small part of my life, so why would it be ever, but
a big part of your
right,
act.
And I try to tell, you know, young gay comics that, yeah, you don't have to make every joke. Funny is funny. Just make it funny.
Right.
If it happens to have to do with that, then that's fine, but it's.
No,
but I don't like too much of anything. I don't like too. Like, two white guy act, two black guy act, two woman act. You know what I mean? A good
mix.
No,
your act is very. That's what I like about it. It's
Thank you.
You can't really pitch and hold your act to a certain style or a certain subject matter. It's just very. Well, again, I guess for lack of better terms, kind of encompassing a lot of different subjects, and it's sold from a very specific point of view, which is just very refreshing.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. When did you? By the way, do you want something to drink?
No, I'm good.
Are you sure?
Okay. I'm absolutely good.
I got some free bottles of water.
Nice.
Yes, and a.
It's very nebbish of you.
Somebody learned a Yiddish word,
and he can't wait to use it. I've been using it inappropriate all week. But.
Oh, suck my dick so nebbishly. what?
Oi,
Avi Lieberman. So should I maybe not do it so much?
So much, but not so much.
So then
they would let me do it so
maybe
much.
A little coddling, maybe. So when did you start comedy, Scott?
I wish I could tell you the first open mic, because most people remember that, as you do. We talked about it the other night. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the first time I went on stage. The first time I went on the road full-time was January 1st, 1989.
So that was your first time going
full-time? Full-time, just, yeah, quit my job, put
so
things in storage.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you don't remember how long you were open micing before you went there?
A couple years here and there.
Okay.
You know, not consistently. So I'd probably say first time I went on stage, 86-ish.
Now, were you openly gay when you first started doing comedy?
No, but I didn't talk about having a girlfriend or anything like that. And I would still, like, mention to guys in the crowd that they were cute, and they would just laugh for the wrong reasons, I think.
wait, how did you do that? Because, like, if you see Scott's act now, I don't want to give anything away, but he usually picks a guy in the audience to kind of be his little whipping boy, for lack of a better term.
I treat him very nice.
No. I don't mean it in a bad way. I just mean he becomes the focal point of the act for a certain amount of time,
for
and
sure.
A lot of callbacks regarding the guy. And it's very funny. It's very and it's always in good fun. And the guys, I've never seen anybody get angry at you for doing it.
No.
But you also talk about being gay too, and you kind of bring that back when you before you were out on stage about it. How did you call a guy cute without it seeming awkward?
I didn't. I'd be like, "What's your name?" I'd go, "Oh, well, you're a very good looking man. You're cute. You're single." Oh. I mean, I would basically hit on them, and they would think it was funny because.
But it sounded like you're kind of doing it almost like an older fella go, "Well, you're a good looking young man."
But I was 20 at the time, so. I was like, "Well, you're good looking. You know, what's your name? You're hot. You're good looking. I mean." And they would just laugh and think it was funny because they didn't
think
I was gay.
Did you actually get laid after the show sometimes?
No.
Did you ever have women come out and hit me?
Yes, absolutely.
What would you tell them?
Absolutely, get away. I was like, you know, I'll call security.
Really?
Yeah, you get an autograph, then move along, honey.
Wow.
Go press your lips. Here's $2. Go get yourself a cup of coffee.
Go press your lips. Walk your hands. Get out of here. You're bothering me.
The grown-ups are talking here, see?
so how long into comedy before you came out on stage openly?
That's hard to say. I wish I knew that. I wish I remembered dates.
My God,
I know. I'm horrible.
Do you remember?
Maybe I should start scrapbooking so I can look back. Oh!
Start blogging.
Yeah.
Keep a journal.
I could find my comedy notebook. I'd have a new 30 minutes.
There
I almost said fuck and then stop myself and then realize we're not on the radio.
We're
it's
not
a
on
podcast,
the radio.
Yes.
You could say fuck, cock, cunt, whatever you
yes.
want.
Yes.
You could say fuck that cocky cunt if you want to.
Absolutely. Probably, I don't know. I'd give you a date, but it'd be wrong.
But like, would you say like within a year of going full time, or was it a couple years?
Oh no, a couple years. Yeah, a few years, I would say.
Do you remember specifically what made you want to decide to come out? Was it just like it was like a big decision, or just like let me just talk about it?
It became part of the act, so it wasn't a big decision, I don't think.
So no big cathartic moment like I can't lie to myself and my audience anymore.
No. Not a big CNN Todd Glass coming out type breaking moment. No, it was just a...
By the way, did you know that Todd was gay?
Todd never told me that he was gay.
Well, I wouldn't assume, because Todd, I've known Todd for a while too, and I don't think I've ever... I've had conversations with him. We've driven to gigs before, but there was never talk of girlfriends or anything. Which is now looking back, and I'm like, that is weird. We never actually talked, or he never mentioned anything like that. But did you have that? Because I'm actually, yeah.
Todd never told me he was gay until I saw him on TV.
I see. That gaydar thing is real then?
You know what? I don't know. Because I had prior.
You know, because I remember, and that, again, this had to be around 2002 or 2003. Scott invited me to a pilot that he did called Gaydar.
Yes.
Yes, it was you, Kathleen Madigan.
Well, no, Kathleen was just a friend. It was me, Brian Dunkelman were the only two cast members, and it was a game show where I would be a permanent cast member to Brian Dunkelman from American Idol season one fame. Mm-hmm. We'd have two other guests. I'd be always a panel member, and then two other panel members, and then they'd bring in three people dressed ambiguously, and we would ask them questions and find out, you know, who's gay and who's straight, basically.
Yeah, no.
It was a Viacom project for VH1.
Yeah, I remember it
went absolutely nowhere. But it had Michael Davies, who was attached to it. He was the exec producer, and he's done, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and everything. I thought it was a good concept. I didn't ever get to see the cut product, but somebody told me from an executive from the network was just like, yeah. Because it was an in-house thing. There was no reason it shouldn't go, you know, at least a season. Mm. But they said it looked horrible cut, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I was there for the taping. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. I remember...
It was fun. It was
remember being really funny.
We did it on the original I Love Lucy soundstage.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize
that.
Yeah,
so the whole week... You know, we only had a week to do it. But going to work every day, it was like, cool, man. This is like... This used to be Desi Lu and all that stuff.
That is really cool. That's history, man.
Yeah.
Where would you say is like the biggest venue you've ever performed stand-up at?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Outside concert, probably 12,000 people.
Who are you opening for?
A bunch of country acts. Okay. Garth before he was famous. Real famous. I mean, obviously he was famous, but before
he was... only 12,000 people.
Yeah, before he was just
a nobody.
Before he was, you know, referring to himself in the third person. and then overseas, probably a few thousand at a time, especially when I went with Attell, Attell. So some of the big places like, you know, Baghdad, you know, and then even Afghanistan, Bagram Air Base, you know, we probably had a couple thousand. That was when Insomniac was on and, you know.
Like at the peak of everything.
Oh, yeah,
for him,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's another good thing about Scott. For those who don't know, if there's any military listening, you probably have heard, maybe even seen Scott Kennedy. He has amazingly gone overseas to entertain the troops. You said 55 times now?
Yeah, 44 to Iraq and 11 to Afghanistan. Oh, and then, I mean, you know, Korea and Japan, some other places. But combat, well, it's 55 in the combat zones.
Oh, so... Okay, so you count Korea and Japan, that's well over 60 times?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My God. Scott was actually the one who took me over to Iraq. I went over there in April 2009, and we went with Mark Sweeney.
Yes, we did.
It was, I mean, comedians talk about all the time being a life-changing thing, and it really was. Yeah. I mean, it was beyond, it's so hard to put into words just how special that was, and really what an amazing experience, and I'm an honor to have gone, not just because the places we went to, places called FOBs,
right,
forward operating bases, and they're just basically little man-made bases, like in the middle of the desert.
Little shitholes, yeah.
Little shitholes, yeah.
If they have a porta-shitter, a porta-john, you are happy. Usually they make their own outhouses and burn their own feces.
Oh, God. I didn't get to experience that on that trip. But the good thing about performing with these is that these are soldiers that do not get entertainment. Usually.
No, yeah, I don't. Most of the time they think when they see the sign, hey, comedy show at 1300, they think that's a joke. They don't think that's ever going to happen. Like, a lot of them have made the comment. Like, some of them have even built a little tiny stage, and they thought, oh, it's our first sergeant getting us. That's the comedy show, is us making, having to build this little stage or something. Not that we need a stage. We don't ask for that. But it's, yeah, they absolutely don't believe anybody would come out to where they're at because it's dangerous. But it's dangerous anywhere. It's get hit by a car walking across the street.
No, well, that,
so it's the most gratifying, I agree with
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, it's the most gratifying audiences I've ever performed in front of.
And you get upset then when you come back to the States and you may be in, you know, Bloomington or something and some drunk at a second show, blah, 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 and you're like, really? I could be so, I could just be where people really appreciate me. I'm taking my ball and going home.
So in front of people who have guns and there are better crowds than you and they appreciated this, you dick. But I think one of the, another cool thing for me going over there, it felt like it was like in the tradition of the Bob Hope kind of thing,
right.
You know, like, cause you know, growing up, I mean, I was very young when Vietnam was just ending, but I would see old footage of Bob Hope and you'd hear like when you start doing comedy, you'd hear comedians saying like, oh yeah, I went overseas and it becomes kind of like this almost holy grail to a comedian. It's like one of the feathers in the cap that if you get that, you've definitely earned, pardon the pun, you've earned your stripes. What essentially brought you into doing the military thing? Was it something like personal, or did you just fall into it and it just became something that you suddenly connected with?
I had a nephew who served in Iraq for two tours and another, one of his friends who's like a nephew. so I wanted to do that. So I started trying to do that. It's very hard to go overseas to get in with different groups like the USO. I did like Bahrain. I did Japan, Korea, then Bahrain, which is in the Middle East. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to the Middle East. They were like, oh, shut up. You can drink in Bahrain. You can gamble in Bahrain. That's not the Middle East. And then I remember when I first was going to Afghanistan, I told them, they were like, okay, don't go. We were just kidding with you. It's really bad. Don't go. But after the first time, I was just hooked. It's like a drug, like you said. It's like... you know, and then going every month for 12 days, it just was like getting your fix.
Oh.
So it's been hard to like kind of decompress from that. Since December, I haven't been, it's been, you know, 6 or 7 months. So, it's been good too. I'm glad all our boys are out of Iraq. I'm starting to go back over to Afghanistan again. So it's good, but that's what got me hooked is that my nephews were there and then, so I wanted to do anything I could. They got no entertainment for the whole, you know, 14 months they were there the first time. And so I was like, well, let's see if we can alleviate that. And
did you actually ever run into your nephew doing overseas?
The kid who's like my nephew, who's my friend's, his name's Royal, who's grew up with my nephew. Yes, in Afghanistan. And that's funny because I could never tell him where I was going to be because I'm on, you know, Hotmail and he's on.
That's right.
Yahoo, and that's not what we call secure, so you couldn't really, he couldn't tell me where he was at, I didn't know where we were going, I was like, well, just look for a comedy show, and in Kandahar, which is a really big base, and there's probably 800 people there, and seconds before they're about to announce me, literally seconds, he walks up and just is like right in front of me, and I'm like I hugged him, I almost started crying, and I was like, then I had to get all badass, because I had to do a show, I was like, sit the fuck down, we'll talk in a second. Did the show, and then afterward, there's this 3-star general who wanted his picture made with us and stuff. And normally, you know, that's real cool. And they give you a coin, which is, just Google challenge coin and it'll explain itself. But I'm sitting there and I didn't think I was being this ingenuine, but the general goes, I'm sorry, am I keeping you from something, young man? I was like, well, actually, my nephew's standing right over there. And he's like, oh, shit, go ahead. You know, so, and we ended up staying there, basing out of Kandahar and going out to small places. So I got to hang out with him like 3 days, have dinner, actually go work out, which is, it was cool.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that's like the biggest surprise in the world.
Yeah, and it's, I think I should still get better Christmas gifts out of that. I'm the only one that came visited him in Afghanistan out of the whole family.
That's true, yeah.
You should think I would be getting some kick-ass gifts. I don't even get a call back.
Oh.
No emails even more.
I don't even think you should have to give him gifts anymore for at least 10. That's a 10-year window,
you.
I would say.
I think so.
Yeah, I fucking visited you in Afghanistan for like 3 days. That's you. My gifts are covered for 10 years.
I agree.
Another thing that that I remember specifically about the trip, and I'm not sure if this has happened before or since, but we were flying back from Kuwait to the States, and there was a soldier on our plane, on our flight. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Who was going back to the States for, I think, heart surgery, and he actually ended up passing away on the flight back to the States.
Yeah. No, that's not actually the whole story. What happened was he did pass away in his sleep. He was going home because his brother died.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
So it was Easter weekend. Yeah, his family. On our United flight, he no medical problems. He was going home on emergency leave, which was all the soldiers. There's about 50 on any given flight. Because a baby's being born or somebody died or whatever. Yeah, his brother had died, who was, I don't know how much younger or older, a couple years, and he was 21 or 22.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Two of the flight attendants retired after that. I've been on a lot of flights with fallen heroes, with you know, past soldiers. I don't expect them to die on my United flight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it sucks. It was hard. I mean, it's not easier when the flag drake caskets on your Black Hawk or on your C-130. It's not easier. But United flight, they're not supposed to die in their sleep. Right. And I actually knew the purser. His name is Jimmy, and we've talked since because he was pretty freaked out about it.
I remember.
Yeah, there was not a lot. I mean, he was dead when they found him. I mean, he had been dead a few hours because we did get some medics up there to start trying to revive him, and it just... They were like, yeah, you know, he's been gone a couple hours. We were about 2 hours out of Dulles.
I remember, I remember one thinking, like, feeling really emotional when that happened. And I remember thinking, like, I don't think I would have been as emotional had I not just come from Iraq. But I also remember, it was honestly one of the most self, I know this sounds kind of silly, but it was one of the most selfless things I've ever seen, especially a comedian do. You had offered to escort the body back home because you weren't sure if there was somebody within the military who's going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Is that something that, like, you not a second thought about? You just...
No. United was like, well, you'll miss your flight. There's other flights. Well, they won't pay for it. They're not that expensive. They may lose your luggage. Look what I'm wearing. Shorts and a t-shirt. I'll manage. No, it wouldn't have... Yeah, I was hell bent on not. If there wouldn't have been a military detail there, I wouldn't have left him.
And you never served in the military, right?
So went to military school in high school, but that's not really.
Is that thing. And is that where you realized? I'm kidding. Sorry. but there's just, I guess it's just something that you connected with when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean,
what was it specifically?
I don't know. I have no idea because I didn't like military school when I was there. And then totally fell in love with the military at, like, you know, afterward.
It's like somebody who'd gone to Catholic school and hated it and then decided to become a priest.
Right, you know? Yeah, exactly, yeah. I can't explain that. Because as comics, we have very little structure in our life.
Yeah.
And I like the military structure, but I also don't like it. So it's like perfect. 12 days a month was perfect. I don't know. I wish I knew what it was. I've even asked my therapist about it. Who knows?
You're a comedian that goes to therapy?
Oi. Yeah. Oi.
Oi? Oi. Nebbish and oi.
Oi. Get in therapy. I suppose it's my Jewish fault? I'm adopted. Who knows, huh?
Are you adopted?
And circumcised. Hey, who knows? But y'all wouldn't give something up like that, would you? No, not a baby.
No, no, no.
They're worth money on the market, aren't they? You just gave him away.
No. A white one, too? Oh, you could have gotten so much. Are you really adopted?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Have you ever found your birth parents?
Never looked.
Never wanted to?
Sometimes, but not really. No. I mean, I was adopted at like 2 months old, so.
Oh, wow.
A lot of comics are. Start asking on your podcast. You'll be surprised. It's it's really odd how many.
Really?
Yeah.
Like who else can you think of?
Yeah, there's a whole string. If you wouldn't ask me, I could give you a whole string of names. But yeah, I mean, like a lot. Like where you go, wow, I wonder if that has anything to do with
it. The only other one I could think of offhand was Amy Anderson.
Yeah. No, there's a whole slew. Just start asking them.
See, that's the thing. Like Do you think that had something to do with you, like, getting into comedy? Just feeling...
I have no idea.
What brought you to comedy? Like that, I think that's like the big thing is like,
I don't know. I always liked comedy and always was pretty disruptive in class. I always thought I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live, so maybe subconsciously it guided me to stand up. I always really thought I'd go Second City route though, Chicago, and then and it turns out I don't like sketch that much. I'm not good. I'm not that good at it. And I don't really like it. So, so it didn't go that way. Yeah, no, just a friend read in the paper in my hometown. There was a contest called Joke Your Way to Jamaica, and I came in third. The other two people are no longer even in comedy, but. You know, it's like you know the first time you go on stage, whether you like it or not.
Oh, yeah.
We have a kid tonight who's 17 that's going on stage for the first time. His name is Ian...
Slater,
something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a very little cathartic moment for both of us. Because my first time doing comedy, well, my very first time, I was 8 years old. But my first, like, official open mic, I was 18, which is just a little older than the kid tonight. He's doing this for a senior project in school. And it's funny, too, because, like... We're like, I don't know about you, but when I see he's been backstage pretty much for a couple of months now, watching the comedians as they rotate in through the club, and he's got like his little notebook and he's running jokes by us. And the comedian, I think we talked about this. The comedian in our mind is going, "Oh, that's such an easy joke, or everybody does that." But then we got to go, "Well, remember, it's his first time on stage. He doesn't know any better. This is exactly what he should be doing." Are you excited about seeing him tonight?
I'm so pumped this whole week because, like you said, this is kind of a boring week, but it's like made me want to do a little better. Like really, like it's like something new, you know. And it's this kid's first time. Whether he continues with comedy or not, he will always remember this day.
Yeah,
you know, this night.
I know. I mean, think about it, you and I are now going to be officially a part of this kid's like very important memory.
Yeah, it's almost like he's and I believe he probably is still a virgin. But it's almost like we're there on that night, too, you know, going, okay, Ian, let's see what you got. All that practice, let's see what you
got. We should buy him a hooker. It's legal up here, isn't it?
It is legal up here, but he's not. So she would go to jail for statutory rape.
Yeah.
17. Now, Texas, it would be legal if you want to throw him in a car and drive him over state lines. And then, although prostitution's not legal, so then, wow, this is a whole conundrum.
Well, you know what? We could pay for her here, then drive her to Texas and just say it was a really great first date.
Maybe. You're thinking.
I'm thinking outside the box.
Yeah, that's sad. He's going to go on stage.
And he's.
I don't know. I hadn't asked him if he's a virgin.
Well, I don't think that's very good opening conversation. I don't your first so. Time on stage. You ever been in a pussy before?
And you're assuming that he's straight.
But
the reason that we're saying that too is because he told us he doesn't have an automobile. He has a bike, and it's hard to pick up girls. So
I wasn't privy to that information.
He's going to try to talk about that on stage a little bit.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I am excited about seeing this kid do his material.
Howie's been molding him too. So
Howie is the. Excuse me, the house MC up here in Tahoe. He's been up here for like 10 years, and he'll be on the podcast next week. I'll be interviewing him.
He is the media giant of Lake Tahoe.
Yes. Like
radio, TV, newspaper, on stage. I honestly do not know. There's not enough hours in the day. He gets everything done. It's amazing.
So you don't know how he does it?
Howie does it.
Howie Nebbish. Blagan.
But he's done this for 10 years as a... help these kids on their senior project. And they can pick anything they want. I mean, to pick stand-up's pretty ballsy. One girl I heard picked flower arranging. Yawn and give her an F. Stupid bitch. But one guy picked, you know, skydiving. Stand-up comedy. I mean, okay.
Wait. How can you... Wait, skydiving... See, stand-up comedy and even flower arranging, I would think you definitely need to practice. You need to observe. You need a couple of months for a comic to get an act together. For flower arranging to... figure out how do you practice skydiving?
Well, if you don't do a tandem jump, you have to go through school and do your first free fall. So I bet that's what he did. It takes months. That's conquering a fear, you know?
Have you ever skydived?
No, I would like to. I think I'm a little heavy, and I would only do tandem probably.
You're falling. How could you be too heavy?
Yeah, they have weight restrictions. If I lost some weight, I would do tandem where you're strapped to somebody because, good Lord, I would get distracted and
not
forget to pull cord or something.
You know,
so I don't know. Yes and no. Sometimes I go, no, I'd never do that. Sometimes I go, sure, let's go. I don't know.
I have that same, like, I am deathly, I'm talking deathly afraid of heights, vertigo, all that shit. But I've always wanted to skydive. I always have. So I think it's something that Allison and I are going to try to do within the next year or two.
Well, if you take something for your anxiety beforehand.
Oh, God, are you kidding? Scott is talking about the legal practice of smoking marijuana, which is legal in California and a couple other states, in which I am a patient and an outspoken advocate for. But there is no way I'd ever get stoned and jump out of a plane. Are you shitting me?
You should totally take acid and see if you can fly off a building. That, seriously, I think it works. I've heard about people who take PCP or something, get you some angel dust, and just get on top of a really tall building. Rock stars do it all the time. At least the ones who had balls.
There really hasn't been, like, some rock star gangster shit going on lately.
Foster the People are not getting on top of buildings with their pumped up kicks.
Yeah, I don't see Lady Gaga having a bad mushroom trip on the top of the Biltmore.
If anybody knows me at all, and you were just sitting there going, did he just do a Foster the People reference? Yes, that is as hip as I can get.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's Kitty Group with them pumped up kicks. Better run, better run. Can't believe I'm singing on your podcast.
You can do whatever you want to do.
Come the pants.
Wow. I might be switching. Totally. I was gonna say we got off subject, but can't tell, there's no subject. We just talk. But anyway, yes. Yeah, so looking forward to seeing Ian tonight. Do his thing. And another thing about Scott that is funny is that Scott works Tahoe in Vegas a lot, as we both do, work in the improvs out here. And Scott is one of we talked a little about this this week anyway. You're very one way or the other about gambling. You're either all in, like all night, I'm gonna break the bank, or just I don't want to go near there because it's evil, yeah, kind of thing.
This week has been a good, but now in the past I've been like that because I've been drinking, and I've taken a couple months off from drinking until July. It's April right now. Oh, it's May. Sorry.
It's May.
I stopped in April. and I still have the impulse, and I still do, but I can walk away a little bit. But no, but in the past, with alcohol and gambling, yeah, I will. It's all or nothing. It's like we're going till there's no more room on the credit cards. The bank accounts are zero.
See, I don't know if it's the Jew, or if I was just, my parents raised me just to be, like, very, they didn't really raise me to be cheap, but to be very aware of money and what I, like, they went into debt when they were younger, so they drilled it in me, don't ever spend more than you have. So when it came to gambling, I've never been a huge gambler. I'm down $25 for the week, and I'm like, oh, it's $25 fucking dollars, and I'm, like, pissing on that. Meanwhile, like, you've told me that you've plunked, like, $2,000 in a machine trying to break it. I'm like, I can't even.
Not this week. This week.
Not this week. Not this week. No.
But yeah, in the past, I've gone way past that point. I've had good wins. I've had good losses. I've had all the above. But yeah, this week is interesting because I have been trying to practice the just walk away. Downstairs before this, by the way, interview, I won $400 and thought, just walk away from that. And I didn't. I put the $400 back in the machine. But instead of going and getting more money to try to get that $400 out of it, I went, oh, I've got to go do this podcast. So
So you're saying I saved you money?
Well, I don't know. I could have kept texting like I did. I'm running late, 15 minutes late. Oh, I could have drawn that out another 45 minutes. I mean,
Flip, I'm running late, and I've got to
I need to borrow $200, and I'm running late. Just have it ready.
There'll be some large gentleman appearing with me on the podcast to make sure I don't go anywhere immediately following.
I need $200 for Ian for the show. He's in jail. I need bail money. It's a hooker. I don't know what to tell you. Just give it to me. No, so I'm trying to be good. It's anybody who has addictive behavior problems. It's not easy. It's the impulse control is.
See, as a comedian, I think a lot of comedians, we've talked about this and we know a lot of the same people, have definite issues when it comes to addiction, whether it be gambling or other things.
Or women, or drinking, or anything. Yeah, exactly. Or blow, or exactly. Anything, yeah.
What would you say is your most addictive, like the thing you're like most drawn to, that would be considered a vice?
Oh, probably food.
Food?
Yeah, then food, then liquor, then gambling, then more things. But those things I don't do anymore.
Have you ever bet on food cooking shows?
Oh, I would. Shit, yeah. I mean, I don't bet money, but me and my boyfriend, Dwayne, do all the time on Chopped. Yeah. You know,
Allison's just got me into Chopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a good chef. And Scotty, you're a great chef.
I'm a good chef. Yeah, I'm good.
I actually remember it was at the Improv. I'm sure you've done this many times, but the first time I ever saw you do this, you like brought in like this huge rack of ribs and all the fixins, and you went in the kitchen of the Melrose Improv and just put
That was a good night, yeah.
That was it. You remember that night?
Yeah.
That was a good, because you had like, it was ribs and collard greens.
Rita seafood enchiladas, my shrimp enchiladas, she'd go crazy.
Scotty! Get out of here! Rita is the general manager of the Improv and kind of like the mother hen, I think, to the comedians there. Yeah, it's a family over there. That's another great thing about the Improv. Like Scott, you know, would go into the kitchen and just cook for everybody, and you know, the Improv would just let him do it. And I got married on stage at the Improv. Eddie, the bartender, married Allison and I. And I've had sex on stage at the Improv.
That's true.
Yeah,
with Eddie, who married. No.
It was during the wedding ceremony. Actually, it was a very odd commitment.
He went to the wrong website to get ordained. But and then I got to take the groom in, huh?
Okay, I guess if that's part of the contract.
And Allison's like rooting it on. Yeah, hold that little bitch down. Allison's a very sweet lady, but very open.
Very open. Wait, what?
She's open to. She seems. I'm saying this like I know her very well. I've met her and I love her, but she seems very free spirit, kind of open.
Oh yeah. No, she. Allison is
not a repressed Jewish woman.
What?
Not a repressed Jewish woman.
Not really. You know what? To make like the way she. Because if you've seen Allison's act, my wife, you know, she's very. Her act is very dirty. She sings a lot of songs about you know, about sex and different, you know. Well, it's just blowjobs and swallowing cum and things like that. Yet she has not been with a lot of guys, which is really funny. Like she and I have talked about this. Like she goes, you know, based on my act, people probably think I'm the biggest whore, but I'm not. She really isn't. But it's funny because on the last podcast, she was there when I was doing it, and we had talked about how she basically pretty much gave me permission to sleep with other women. Just so long as A, I tell her that I'm going to do it, and B, I don't do anything to please the woman. Only the woman could blow me, but I can't go down on her or anything. And the other guest on the podcast was like, that is the biggest load of shit I think I've ever heard. And she's like, no, I really, it's fine. Like, you think you would, but if I were to call you and say, hey, honey, I met a girl in a truck at door, I'm going to fuck her. And you'd be like, okay.
Yeah, I think the whole premise of that, as long as you tell me first. I don't know. Good luck with that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've never cheated. Like, whenever I've been in a relationship, it's always been monogamous, because I've been cheated on before, but I would never cheat on any girl I've ever been with or blah, blah, blah. So even with permission, I don't think I could do it.
That might take the wind out of the sails, too, with permission. If you, some guys who do that find it fun to sneak around or whatever. I'm the same way with you. I'm not a cheater. I just don't.
Oh, I thought you meant you want to sneak around with
me. No.
Wait, what's wrong with me?
You're the same way. You said you're monogamous.
No, but am I not attractive enough to cheat around with?
We'll be right back after this. Brought to you by
Awkward.
Brought to you by Epicat. Yeah, my boyfriend sometimes has a problem with me going on the road because he's younger than me. But I'm like, dude, you are everything I want. And it's like, who wants – I'm fucking old and fat and fucking a pain in the ass. If he can put up with me, good luck. I'm not going anywhere else.
A little liberty with it.
Flip is getting over the flu, so he's yakking it up.
So sorry about the coughing again. I want to ask you about that too. Now, you and Joyne have been together how long now?
About a year since we started talking, a couple months away from a year.
Okay.
And then he moved in December.
Oh, that was kind of quick to me.
Yeah, it was kind of quick. But it's good.
Oh, it's good.
Very happy.
So do you, now you live in Texas.
I live in Austin, Texas.
Okay, and as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, it is not legal there for for gay people to have to be married or have the same rights as married people or straight people.
Yeah, no, no, it's not a state right, no. But we're not married, you know.
No, no, I know, but is that something that, I'm not saying with Dwayne, but is that something that...
I want to be with Dwayne. If he listens to this, you know, you're making him feel...
Oh, no, no, what? I'm just saying, like, I don't want to... So you're going to marry Dwayne? It's like, I don't want to put you on the spot or make any awkwardness. I'm just... Let's say eventually you and Dwayne are together for a while and you you decide you want to do the commitment thing. Is that something would you guys have... Would you consider moving from Texas? Or was it? Is that even something that... That's a desire for you to.
It's not a big deal to me. I mean, I think it's equality, and you know what is. You can honestly, legally, have somebody your. To give them all the same legal rights, like as far as hospital visitation and all that stuff, you just have to put it in your living will and stuff. So, I'm okay with not. I don't necessarily. I think a wedding would be pretty awkward on. Everybody, a gay wedding's pretty awkward.
I don't think a gay wedding would be like the biggest party of the year.
You would think, and you would think it would be done tastefully, but then you look at me and you go, maybe not so much.
So you wouldn't be like, oh, we got to have the flowers this way and things.
I don't know. I'm pretty good at design, but no, I'm not like that. If you guys want, go to my website, comicscott.com, and you can see that I'm not a typical looking gay guy.
No. That which is another. Now, do you find that as an advantage? Like, because there's some like, just off the top of my head, Ant, who's a very effeminate man, and pretty much the second he gets on stage, you could tell that he is playing for the other team.
Yes.
Whereas you are a very you're a straight looking guy. You don't come across as being gay if somebody doesn't know you. Do you find that to be an advantage sometimes when you're playing certain gigs?
Oh, sure, I guess. You know, it makes people not, they don't assume right away.
And, are there places, because I think every, with the exception of going overseas, which is totally understandable, I don't think I've ever seen you do a show where you haven't done bits about you being gay. Have you ever had like shows where you were like, I should not mention it in this crowd?
No, I've always, even if Wyoming or stuff. But I mean, there's times I don't do it. Like, I don't think I've done it up here at the lake in the last 3 or 4 years. Usually just because if I'm in a feature position, it's only 25 minutes. Yeah. Can I get it? Yeah, have you seen me do it at the Melrose Improv when I have 7 minutes? But it's just sometimes it's just too much work to get to that point in my act. It's just a lot. There's other stuff I'd rather talk about than that, but.
I notice the gay stuff usually comes toward the end of the set too. Is that specific so you kind of, for lack of a better term, win them over with your more general material and then kind of?
Possibly, I didn't plan it that way, but yeah, possibly subconsciously.
Oh, so you didn't strategically plan to do that? It just kind of fell that way?
Yeah, it just kind of crowns off the set, in my opinion, and.
Because that's something that's like very interesting. Like for me, like matter of fact, I have my set list right here, and like my set list is always broken down into like usually it's opens with just some shit about traveling, and then I go into relationship stuff, and that this I'm doing a short set this week, and then just close it up in some pot jokes and a generic closer that I always do, but I always seem like my act is always structured that way. I open kind of with like light. Travel stuff that's relatable to everybody, then start going into the more relationship and getting a little darker into the sex stuff and blah, blah, blah. Did you, as a comedian, did you never really structured your act like that to have like gay stuff at the end so I can, you know, I don't hit them awkwardly beginning with it if they're not that kind of crowd?
No, I'm not as good a comic as all the others with lists and stuff. I wish I don't write enough and I don't structure enough. And Dat Van like has laughs per second to meters and stuff. I mean, I'm not. I need to take it more like a business. You know, it's been 23 years. Maybe I should really buckle down and figure. I should really do it like a structure.
Get a little serious after 23 years.
Yeah, my friend Becky Petty goes, yeah, because I really did lose my comedy notebook. When you first start a comedy, you get a notebook where you buy it yourself. You don't get it, but and you write down everything you think is funny, and then you build on it. And you know, some comics have 50 notebooks by now, and. I'm still looking for that one. I left it at the club one night or something.
Kill me.
And then a couple years later, I found it. But it's still, if it's in my house, it's in a box and it hasn't probably been used since 1989.
Have you ever seen this?
Oh my God.
I'm showing Scott my travel comedy notebook.
This is like a good size of a manuscript, bound. and it is it's hefty.
See, it's broken up. This is how anal I am. The front of it is are all my bits shorthanded, broken into categories with a lot of scribbly notes on them. The next section is a type set list of every club I've played. So when I go back, I know what I did, and I could not repeat a lot of material. Matter of fact, that was Tahoe from when I was here last year.
See, and I've always thought about doing that, how helpful that would be.
It's become so helpful. And then it's the notebook paper where it just write down all my sets that I do around town and notes for jokes, and then all my jokes typed out full hand.
And there's a map in the back where the bodies are buried. So
it's an all-purpose comedy notebook.
That is awesome. But you see, I would get tired of lugging it. That's heavy.
That's the travel one. I have one at home.
I know. Just you said travel a couple times, so I was like, oh, there's something at home in a trunk.
At home, I have same thing, all everything typed out in sections, but they're all in individual plastic sheets with little tabs to separate the sections in like a hardcover kind of notebook. That's too heavy to travel with. That's why I have that one.
I'm impressed. Yeah. I have an office in my house that I don't even use. I'm going to start using it. It's nice, too. I put all the Iraq stuff up in there. I have a desk and a computer and everything.
Now you just have to...
go up there. Yeah. It's... yeah.
And this is... And Scott, this is your first home, right? You bought a condo. You're renting a condo, but you're fixing it up.
I bought the townhouse I live in. And I bought a couple more for investment properties. And I'm remodeling one this week while I'm not there. So it's stressing me a little bit. It's in Austin. It's a little bit smaller. I live in Lakeway, which is outside of Austin. And then I bought another one earlier in the year in Lakeway.
People are going to know where to stalk you now.
That's fine. Lakeway's fine. We have a good police department. They're fine. They'll take care of you. Trust me. You ain't from around here, are you, boy? I'm loving Austin.
That's very
like we were talking. Yeah, there's no retirement in comedy, folks. So
now I was going to say that too. Like, look, 23 years in comedy, and Scott, and you can go to his website, comicscott.com, and see that he's done been on Ferguson. He was on had his own Comedy Central Presents. Were you on Last Comic?
Yes, but not really. I mean, a little bit. Got some good money from it, but never made it past the evening show. So never made it into the semi.
Oh, okay.
But they would use it on some stuff because Bob and Ross were my original managers. So, like, I would get random checks for $1,200, $1,800 because I'm SAG-AFTRA. So, mm-hmm. I'd be like, I didn't know you got paid for this. So, yeah, I made some good money off of it for a couple of years. Not when I say good, but, you know, a couple grand here and there.
Whenever you get that, like, nice residual check.
The check you're not expecting. Yeah. It's like, oh.
The unexpected.
Yes, exactly.
Unexpected. But Scott, you has done a lot of great things. But 23 years in the business now, do you foresee yourself kind of veering off into other like avenues, or is stand up? Do you think that's going to be it?
Every year, I've always gone, well, shit, if this doesn't work out, I wonder what I could do. You know, hey, I wonder if they're hiring here at the hotel front desk. That'd work, huh? I could do that, or I don't know. I mean, I'm always thinking like, surely this can't go on another year. Surely they're going to fucking figure that out. I have no idea what I'm doing.
That's a fear of every comic. Yeah. I get that sometimes too.
You know, there's no guarantees, and I've always, when comic friends of mine freak out, I don't have any work. I always tell them, don't relax. Things always work out, and they always work out for them. So, I don't have a lot of work coming up, so I'm not trying to give myself the same advice. Don't freak out. Things will happen.
Yeah. No, it always seems to work out that way. When, like, I remember there was a time that I was looking into substitute teaching because I was like, I don't have any gigs. I have like $800 left in my checking. I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do. And then things just start falling out of the woodwork. Just kind of stay positive.
Knock on wood.
Knock on.
All right, I'm about to leave you, Flip. I'm about to leave you. I've got to go call Dwayne and get ready for dinner. We're having dinner with the young man that's doing a show.
With it. Yeah, okay. Well, I guess the interview's over because...
This interview's over, man!
My God, well...
How dare you talk about me getting another job? This is fucking dumb.
I know. What an awkward way to end. So, Scott, good luck. I hope you don't have to quit comedy.
I thought about substitute teaching, and if you weren't a sexual predator, that might be up your alley. I don't know how far back they check, but you can check into that yourself.
Yeah. I think you're safe.
By the way, can I tell my favorite joke that I never get to tell on stage?
Yes, please.
Because I have to open with it, and it's such a dark joke, and I'm not a dark person. But I walk up and say, hey, how's everybody doing? Oh, I'm kind of tired. I spent all day today moving. Doesn't everybody hate moving? The crowd, yeah. I go, I don't hate moving all those heavy boxes. I just hate going door to door to alert the new neighbors that I'm a sexual predator. Hey, they're your kids. Keep them off my lawn. I can't help it if the Boy Scouts don't sell cookies. All right.
That's a very funny joke.
It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
But I can't open with it and then go into cutesy little song and dance that I do.
Well, why don't...
And then I don't like to do the gay stuff and then the sexual... Then they go, oh, because all gay people are pedophiles. And that's absolutely not true.
Oh, that... God, where would be
people,
a good...
Yeah, people mentally will put that shit together.
May, what if you say, like, you don't open with it, but maybe 5 minutes into the act, you go, hey, folks, can I just tell you one of my favorite jokes I've ever written?
Maybe.
Just do one of those. Just, like...
Maybe. How about you do that joke tonight? And we'll see how it works for you.
You don't think I will?
No, I know you will.
I will. Scott Kennedy, thank you again so much. Again, you can check him out, comicscott.com. Do you have you're on Facebook?
Facebook, absolutely.
Twitter?
Yeah, not very much.
Not, but you are on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I haven't tweeted in 6-8 months, but
well, if
continue
you
to follow it.
If you'd like to get your bi-yearly tweet from Scott Kennedy, you can find him on Twitter. And all your dates are on your website? Yeah?
Yep, and you can get the CD at the website.
Yes, Scott has a very funny CD called...
Or iTunes or anywhere else.
Website, iTunes, all the regular places. And again, you could always check me out at flipisfunny.com. Check me out at Flip Schultz on Twitter. Facebook, you can friend me at facebook.com/flipschultz2. Guess I reached my limit on the first Flip Schultz page.
Thank you
to all 5,000 of my Facebook friends on that page. Also, this coming week, I will be performing, doing a one-nighter at Rock the Keys Piano Bar Comedy Night in Rancho Cucamonga, California. And at the end of June right now, I'll be at Stand Up Scottsdale. And again, dates are always found on my website. And you can order my CDs off my website or iTunes and Amazon. And please go, if you haven't yet, check out Breaking Wind, the movie that I did that spoofs Twilight. And look out for the new movie, tentatively called TikTok, which I'll be starring in. Yay! Should be out later this year. Sign up for the mailing list. And please keep subscribing to the podcast. Thank you guys for listening to What's for Dinner. And thank you again, Scott Kennedy.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Before I leave the stage and turn you back over to your host and let you go for your night, for the night, and I know this sounds like the setup to a stupid joke, but I promise you it's true. If I can get serious for just 1 minute, like Ronnie mentioned, he came in today as a last minute filler for another comedian, and that comedian's name was Scott Kennedy. And not only was he an amazing comedian, he was really a very good friend of mine, and he passed away yesterday. He was supposed to be here tonight on the stage, and I guarantee you guys would have loved him as much as you loved Ronnie, who is an amazing, came in the crutch and really did a fantastic job. But if you guys would just indulge me for 1 second, because I have a feeling Scott might be here right now, would you just give him one more round of applause? Because I guarantee you would have if he had him here. Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much. Good night.